Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to On the Ball with Rick Bucher. Here's your host.
Let's send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
This is On the Ball on the United WeCast Network, and I am Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1, hear me on Fox Sports Radio, and you can read me on the Fox Sports app and at foxsports.com. You can also follow me on X, the former Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Rick Bucher. I'm a lot of places, but there's only one place you can hear me talking about story angles and perspectives that you are not likely to find anywhere else, primarily, but not exclusively, involving the NBA, and that is here. So, sometimes, as I'm watching the landscape of sports, thoughts or questions hit me about various events and occurrences that would appear to have nothing to do with the other, and maybe because of the way my mind works, I find a commonality between them, an explanation or answer for why I'm seeing what I'm seeing in these two separate events or occurrences. In this case, the first is the rise in popularity of women's basketball, collegiate basketball in particular, which comes at a very convenient time for me because my daughter happens to be a collegiate basketball player. The second is the list of international players dominating the NBA Most Valuable Player race and the chase for the next league championship. And believe it or not, I see a connection between the rise in popularity of women's basketball, collegiate women's basketball, and the NBA MVP race being dominated by international players. Now, before I explain what that connection is, let me say that I believe it's only a matter of time before an international player is the face of the NBA. Right now, I'm watching Nikola Jokic, a Serbian, battle Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a Canadian, Luka Doncic, a Slovenian, and Giannis Antetokounmpo, a Nigerian raised in Greece, all in the mix for this year's NBA Most Valuable Player Award. And I haven't heard any one of their fans say, man, love having Luka, love having Shai, love having Nikola on our team. I wish he was an American. Sorry, I'm not hearing that. And by the way, there isn't an American, I'm not skipping over anybody, there isn't an American within hailing distance of winning MVP right now, and there isn't even one on the horizon that I would look to and say, yeah, you know what, in a year or two, he's going to be that guy. That figure off in the distance, that's Victor Wembanyama, a Frenchman, who may join the party as early as next season. Which is why I believe a Euro face becoming the NBA face is going to happen sooner rather than later. And look, I know there are those who would contend that's never going to happen. American NBA fans won't accept it. American NBA fans at their core are jingoistic, too much pride. It's our game. It's our league. We can't have somebody from overseas coming in and being the face of the league. Has to be an American-born, American-developed player. And as I see it, that is simply outdated, antiquated thinking. Because the world is constantly changing and feels as if it's changing faster at an even faster pace. we now have, I mean, some of the things that are, we now take for granted that are revolutionary considering the last 100 years, or let's say 80 years, if we're just looking at the NBA and how long it's been around and what it has represented. We now have cryptocurrency. We have dual threat quarterbacks in the NFL, artificial intelligence, and we have a pitch clock in Major League Baseball. Hell, that women's college basketball is a thing now is a revolutionary event. That's very much a change. It's hip for U.S. sports fans to follow and root for an English Premier League or an international soccer star. And look, I did that as a kid and felt like a bit of a freak. I watched the hour of Bundesliga, that's the German Pro League, Bundesliga highlights, soccer made in Germany. That was all we could get, and I couldn't wait to see the next installment. I didn't have too many friends. In fact, I didn't have any friends who were doing the same thing. There are people now in our country that do have strong nationalistic tendencies, no doubt. Big part of our country. But I would say on some level, for the most part, we all have become more global-minded. I mean, just look at where Luka and Shai and Giannis are all playing. They're playing in the middle of the country. They're playing in red states, if you will. So, and again, I don't see them not being admired, embraced, celebrated for all of their success. So it's, look, for the most part, I really believe we are evolving. It's one reason why air travel continues to expand at an amazing rate. The world is more intertwined than ever before. It feels smaller than ever before. People are attracted and fascinated by what is going on, not just inside their country, but outside of their country and their culture. Some are just learning that quicker than others, is all. Now, all that said, I do understand why there are people who believe a foreigner can never be the face of the NBA. It's because they believe culture, American black culture to be exact, is an inherent part of the game and the league. And you can't possibly have that or understand that or represent that if you're a foreigner. And my answer to that is, you're right. But what I would counter with is that American black culture is not the NBA culture. Not anymore. If you haven't noticed, the NBA has systematically toned down the cultural aspects of the NBA, in case you haven't been paying attention. And by cultural, I do mean black, or street, or blacktop. That's probably the more accurate way to go. Because, again, plenty of places, Indiana is the first place that comes to mind, plenty of places that have a street feel to them that isn't necessarily black, but it does have a raw edge to it. The roots of the game, the NBA game, which traditionally had more of a raw, in-your-face feel than the college game, has been, those edges have been slowly removed. Men's college basketball has always been largely antiseptic. And I can't help but believe that maybe the late David Stern and the powers that be saw the popularity of college basketball in the nexus of Magic and Bird coming from their championship game into the NBA and decided to replicate or steal that formula. And what was that? That was to create a more bland diet that would appeal to a wider audience. By now, it feels as if almost all the individual flavor of the league has been eliminated. You still have players who act out. You still have players who have swag. But so much of it feels like it doesn't feel genuine. It doesn't feel like it truly came from the streets. Every time a new trend In any case, every time a new trend that has some sizzle to it, slapping the backboard after a dunk, headbands worn cockeyed, socks or shorts worn a certain way, gestures or demonstrative celebrations, all of it rooted in street ball playground style or soul, which is what first captivated us. The NBA finds a way to dial it down or eliminate it. And I say almost all the flavor has been sucked out of the league because they have allowed greater expression in one particular area: shoes. There was a time when they had to be uniform, matching the colors of the team and having a certain percentage of white in them. And while hoop shoes have always been an important part of the culture, it's a rather innocuous part. What kind of kicks you wore said something about you as a baller, but a very small part. No one thought a player was cool strictly because of their kicks. In fact, if you were going to have wild-looking hoop shoes, there was added pressure to have a game that stood out in a big way as well. You couldn't have expensive hoop shoes and not have game. At least that's how it was where I came up. Otherwise, you were just a clown in the proverbial and traditional sense. Kicks couldn't overshadow how you played, what kind of personality you played with, or what kind of baller you were. It was all bundled into one package, and the shoes were an add-on. Now they're the most distinguishing element on the court at times. And what a cheap form of expression. Anybody can buy a colorful pair of shoes, which I guess is the point. Fans can go to the store and buy the thing that makes their favorite player stand out. So it creates another revenue stream, and as do all the different team uniforms. And I suppose it wouldn't make any sense, just thinking about the old NBA rule of your shoes have to match your uniform. Every player would have to have dozens of different colorway shoes in order to match all the different uniform color schemes that teams play in these days. What a colossal headache for the equipment manager if that were the case, where they had to match them up with every uniform. Of course, allowing a greater variation of shoes being worn by teams means that there is more product to sell. And more product to sell means making, rather than spending, more money. And it's always about the money. But you know where the game of basketball isn't toned down? Women's basketball. College women's basketball. LSU, South Carolina. They have a very different vibe from those girls in Iowa. And it's very apparent different vibe. Schools, variety of schools, have personalities. Coaches have personalities. They have different styles of play, which adds a layer of suspense in terms of which style is going to win out. The women's game is also proof that tearing down the rim or playing above it is not at all necessary to playing entertaining basketball. Caitlin Clark is in a draw just because she can drain a shot from 40 feet, any more than Curry is a great player because he can score from the logo. Iowa thumped LSU in the semifinal because of Clark's ability to pass ahead, to thread gaps in LSU's transition defense. LSU getting back on defense consistently ran with Iowa's players instead of getting ahead of them and facing up. When I coached a AAU girls team for a hot minute, I called it sheepdogging. We don't want a sheepdog. We don't want a herd or ride herd when we're getting back on defense. We want to beat them to the other end and be able to turn and face up and then make a stop. LSU played like sheepdogs, and Clark repeatedly made them pay with perfectly angled lead passes to her teammates for layups. Now and then, one of the LSU players would catch up and make a dramatic block, but the play was actually a damning statement because it showed their superior athleticism that they weren't using to sprint back and get in front of those fast-breaking Hawkeyes. And I was actually surprised. I did not expect that from a Kim Mulkey coach team, that they wouldn't be more disciplined than they were. And I should have prefaced, again, all this by saying that I've watched more than my share of women's basketball the last few years. I mentioned that my daughter is playing collegiately. She's done so basically for 3 years now, redshirted her first year. And so that has allowed me, this is the part that I should have prefaced with, I've developed the necessary lens and level of expectation necessary when watching the game. I've come to understand and accept what it isn't and appreciate what it is. It's a lot slower than the men's game. Same with women's soccer, to be honest with you, versus men's. But that allows more fans to see a play unfold and how it unfolds. It also preempts plays from never happening. That's important to understand, too. I put out a commentary about the controversial illegal screen called at the end of the UConn-Iowa game, semifinal game. And the biggest pushback I got was that, contrary to what I suggested, there was an advantage gained by the screen. Edwards was open, Aaliyah Edwards, who set the screen, was open to roll to the basket because her defender, Hannah Stolke, the Iowa big, jumped out at Paige Beckers, who had received the ball or had the ball, was coming off of the pick by Edwards and being defended by Gabby Marshall of Iowa. Now, here's the problem. There was already a UConn player in the post with an Iowa defender on her back. So there really wasn't anywhere for Edwards to roll. Well, what about the short roll for a mid-range jumper? Well, Paige has the ball, if you watch the video, and I watched it countless times. Paige has the ball on the right side of her body and appears to be looking, if anywhere, into the post after she can't get a shot. And that's because she's being guarded by a bigger, longer player in Stolke. And so the ball on her right side, there's no angle for her to get it to Edwards unless she switches it back to her left side, by which time Gabby Marshall, her original defender, should have been there to cut off or allow Stolke to get back to Edwards. Now, if Paige was going to throw a pocket pass to Edwards, it had to happen a lot sooner. It had to happen almost immediately. It would be more of a slip screen for Edwards. And look, we can debate all day long what might have happened if the whistle didn't blow. And if anyone wants to argue that because the game is slower, the advantage created needed more time to develop, okay, maybe. There's validity in that. But the fact is, Beckers didn't get a shot off the screen because Stolke hedges and then quickly jumps out on her. It's hard to know what would happen next because that's when the whistle was blown. The referee didn't wait a beat to fully see if an advantage was created. And anyone saying that Marshall couldn't get back to Beckers, again, didn't watch the video as many times as I did. Marshall stops as soon as the whistle is blown. One other aspect to love about the women's game.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
They seem to know when not to get into an opponent's face or lose focus on the task at hand. And I think about the two semifinal games that we witnessed and the final. Were there any histrionics? Any flexing? Any you're not on my level trash talk? Any early celebration? Not at all. It was all business. Even the South Carolina Gamecocks against North Carolina State made short work of them. And boy, I have to say, just overall, for a team as dominant as they are, they sure are easy to root for. And I'm sure some of you are thinking, I imagine some of you are thinking, maybe even have the audacity to post it on social media, stop simping, Bucher. The women and their game are nowhere near as talented as the NBA, or even men's college basketball for that matter. And I'm not saying they are. I think it's ridiculous that anyone would suggest Caitlin Clark surpassed Pete Maravich's collegiate scoring record. I don't even have a problem with Lynette Woodward suggesting that her all-time scoring record for the women should still stand, in light of the fact that she played with a men's-sized ball and no three-point line. I have no problem with Diana Taurasi saying Clark won't have her way in the NBA the way she has at the collegiate level. I love that, actually. I wish someone in the NBA had had the guts to say that when Zion Williamson or Victor Wembanyama came into the league. Not because I want those players to fail, or that I believe either what Diana had said or someone would challenge Zion or Victor. It's that I want them challenged. It's that I don't want to see them crowned before they actually do anything. And knowing that players already in the league want to make them prove it says something too. All too often it feels with the NBA is, hey, fellas, come on in. The water is warm. It's a beautiful life. Instead of, yeah, come on in. Let's see how long you last. The NBA has become far more about being boys and being in the same club, literally and figuratively, and chatting it up on each other's podcast and hanging together in the off season. I attribute a lot of that to the NBA's methodical sanding away of its rough edges. Why should players go at each other's neck on the court when they are making a gazillion dollars and the league is quick to yank their leash anytime they do a little too much? Now, none of the talk about Woodward or Maravich, by the way, is to take away from Caitlin Clark. It's to acknowledge, and this I think is important, that causes a lot of the inane debate that we have in social media over and over again. It's to acknowledge that an accomplishment under less favorable circumstances shouldn't be erased by an accomplishment under more favorable circumstances. And I'm going to pull an age card here, but when I have somebody debating, and I'm going to say it, the LeBron versus Jordan or even J.J. Redick talking about Bob Cousy or whatever, like if you didn't see it, you're really not qualified to compare the two. If you've seen both, then I'm willing to listen to you. If you're going off of what you watched on TV as a kid versus what you experienced firsthand now, it may feel like you can make that comparison, but you really can't. I will just tell you personally, it's really hard for me to look at the era of Magic and Bird and try to compare it to even the 90s and the 2000s, which were eras that I covered firsthand, covering the league. I was there. I saw it in person. I was at the practices. I talked to the players and coaches. I was steeped in it, just like I'm steeped in it now. So when I compare anything from the 90s to now, I've seen and experienced both of them on the same level. And that's where my viewpoint, that's how my viewpoint is crafted. And if you haven't done that, it's not that I think I'm better. It's just, your opinion is vulnerable to being flawed. That's the only way I can put it. So in the case of Clark versus Woodward or Maravich, what Clark did doesn't surpass them. She played against different competition and under different rules. What I am saying is that watching the women's game overall now is more enjoyable for all the reasons that I just described. Look, there are musicians and singers who perform songs that require incredible range and technique, musical ability, but those are not always the most popular or entertaining songs. Sometimes simple and true and appealing to the soul win the day. And so it is with women's basketball right now. They are ringing the right bell. Men's college basketball, by the way, is at the other end of the spectrum. It has become the most PC, vanilla, white-shoed, predictable, simplistic version of the game imaginable. I predicted UConn and Purdue would play in the final, but I didn't watch either of the semifinal games. I knew how they were going to end, and I know how the two teams were going to play, or four teams. I saw somebody tweet, this game is, it was a derogatory comment from one of my college basketball colleagues. And I thought, yeah, I'm not surprised. They said it was not a very attractive game. Again, not surprised. There's not a whole lot of intrigue to it. And part of it is the men's game in general has less of the fundamentals of the women's game, the college men's game, that is. Less of the fundamentals of the women's game, and yet none of the extraordinary individual play of the NBA. The most notable personality in the game today is Dan Hurley, a 51-year-old white dude from Connecticut. And yeah, I know he's from New Jersey originally, and he still shows his Jersey roots, but he's now coach of the UConn Huskies. And that blue button-down, khaki pant, boat shoe culture, that'll get to the best of us. As someone who worked for a company in Bristol, Connecticut for a good stretch, fortunately, I only parachuted in. I did not live there full time, but I saw its effect on people. It's real. Name the players, the men's player with the biggest personality, by the way. One that you were aware of before the tournament started. Not the biggest profile. That probably would be Zach Edey. I'm talking about a must-see TV on the court, what Caitlin Clark or Juju Watkins or Paige Beckers did for women's basketball. That kind of player for the men's game. There isn't one. Not in game or personality. The men's game, collegiate men's game, has no flavor whatsoever. The scrutiny, and I've attributed it to, the scrutiny on behavior has them all walking on eggshells. Imagine a male collegiate player trying to get away with what Clark or Angel Reese or Haley Von Lith or Cameron Brink have said, or the gestures that they've made. Even the you can't see me gesture in an opponent's face. Imagine a men's player doing that on the court. It would be a technical. And his coach would probably grab him by the neck. When was the last time you saw a player do that? And good Lord, imagine a male player telling a referee, F you, as he walked off the court the way Cameron Brink did. After she, I believe it's when she fouled out. It's a double standard. There's no question. But you know why no one's complaining? It's because they love it. Because it's such a surprise, as if we'd forgotten what it was like for players to be emotional and no one was ordered to crack down on them when they were. The women are expressing the kind of raw emotion we all grew up on, the kind of raw emotion that we're used to seeing in basketball because of the confined space, the proximity of the spectators to the players and the court, and the absence of helmets or caps. It's at the heart of what drew a lot of us to the sport in the first place. One of my most indelible high school memories is walking up the steps of our gymnasium as a freshman, high school freshman. I think I'd just gotten done with soccer practice and was probably going in for basketball practice, and or maybe there was a game that night, because I just remember this image of walking through the set of fogged up double doors and being hit by the sound of basketballs rhythmically thumping the floor and the squeak of shoes and that fetid warmth of all those bodies packed into the gym and the anticipatory buzz and murmur of the crowd and then the back and forth on the court and the window steamed up inside the gym. And I ended up believing my best path to playing collegiately was as a soccer player, starting and scoring goals as a freshman. But basketball was the game I loved because of the culture and the atmosphere. I loved soccer because of what I could do and what it could do for me, along with an appreciation for the beauty of the game. I mean, it did, being a first-generation American, it did give me, felt like it gave me a connection to my ancestry. But basketball always hit a more pure place in my heart. I loved the game deeply for the game and all that it involved. The music, the talk, the clash of cultures, the flair, the expression, the different styles. So much of that, and I mean playing styles, and so much of that has been erased in the NBA by the vast amounts of money earned and still to be made. The league is hyper aware of offending anyone who has money to spend on their sport, which means being hyper vigilant that their players don't do or say anything to offend anyone willing to contribute to their money train. And Euro players are generally on their best behavior, so they fit the model. I guess they're on their best behavior because they still see themselves as guests, no matter how many awards or how much acknowledgement they receive. Luka carping on the officials is breaking some new ground, but even he doesn't do it the same way Draymond or even LeBron does it. Luka is as likely to smile and shake his head at a referee as he is to bark or snarl at him. And there's only one NBA player that I can really think of right now who still has this kind of authentic competitive expression. I mean, an American-born and American-developed player. And that's Stephen Curry. Too many other guys look as if they're acting out to act out, or they're adopting someone else's style or approach. They're copying someone. It doesn't feel genuine, or it feels manufactured. You know who I feel that from the most? I mean, and just there's others, but I'm going to throw these two names out. Dylan Brooks and Devin Booker, two DBs for whatever reason. And that's just the name two. I would say that they do it for different reasons. Dylan, I believe, does it because he thinks being hated is the same as being feared or respected. And I may be in the minority, but I think Dylan has a considerable amount of game. He's a willing defender. He has the size and athleticism to guard multiple positions. And he's got a fairly diverse offensive skill set. He's also fearless. He will take a shot in a big situation. But he's tried to enlarge his profile as a player with antics that just are ill-timed. Prior to the last 12 months, Draymond Green was fairly well calculated in when he would go off, challenging an opponent or an official. It was intended to inject energy or urgency into his team at a time when they needed it. And his timing was pretty good and it worked. He still has that ability. He's just crossed the line a few times and been counterproductive more often than ever before because it's felt like it is not about the team. It's about him. It's not about the team's struggles. It's about his struggles has caused him to act out. As for Booker, it's as if he watched Kobe Bryant mean mug the crowd and beat his chest, and he thinks that's part of being a great player. And I feel that way in part because he does all that prematurely all too often, before the job is done, which is something that Kobe would have never, never done. And so as a result, Booker ends up looking like a poser. I'm thinking of the times he has mocked Luka Doncic and then ended up having Luka walk off with his lunch at the end of the game. And look, I have no problem with understated players like Jalen Brunson, who have a quiet swagger about them. But for the game to feel complete, I need a few that aren't, genuinely. I want a Gary Payton, because being a chatterbox and constant irritant was part of who he is. Gary Payton brought his street game to the NBA. He was in the NBA what he was when you saw him playing in the streets in Oakland. I don't mind Patrick Beverley when he could still play, kind of doing the same thing, because I do feel that's who he is. And maybe I'm showing my age, but showing your personality on social media isn't the same as making it a part of your game and showing it on the court. Now, Curry has found a way to showboat without having the league try to get him to tone it down. And maybe it's the baby face. Maybe it's that he doesn't direct his dancing and celebrations at anyone, even when it's meant for someone. Or maybe it's because he generally does it with a smile on his face. Or maybe it's because he's 6'3 and 190 pounds and you just know that he's not, whatever he's doing is not going to lead to fisticuffs. Because have you ever seen him get teed up for celebrating? Guys get routinely teed up for celebrating after a dunk. Now, why is that? Why is that not okay? And Curry's is. And I'm not trying to goad the league into curbing Curry's enthusiasm. Not at all. I'm looking for the league to allow passion and primal screams back into the game. Allow players to express themselves in different ways, even if it doesn't feel 100% PC. We've become a little too hypersensitive when it comes to that in the professional basketball court. It's as if they don't trust the players to rein in their emotions. But it's funny, they don't have that concern with the women. Now, why is that? You want to be sexist? That's a pretty sexist view of things. I could say it's born of an antiquated notion that women are just too sweet, too prim and proper to get tangled up, but we know that's not the case. Liz Cambage, among others, has shown us that much. What I really think it is, though, is not believing women exchanging words or looks is going to lead to a brawl, and that men doing the same will. And you know what? It could. But it also would allow the players to police their own. And you can't convince me that the epidemic of flopping and complaining to the refs and the absence of rivalries and playing every minute to win hasn't been born from the NBA putting a lock on any and all emotion that they deem to be too much. Because if you're playing hard every night, if every game matters, the reality is you're going to redline now and then. And what exactly is wrong with that? I actually don't have a problem with anything that Draymond Green has done. You know why? Because it's so rare. There's no question that Draymond Green still cares. Despite all the championships, all the finals runs, money in the bank, he still wants to prove one more time that he and the Warriors are better than everybody else. And that seems to be a threat. Okay, so you don't always like the way that he does it. Hate to break this to you, but if you go back 20 years, there were a lot of guys that were willing to push the envelope. It's just we didn't have videotape on social media 24/7 replaying it in slow motion for everybody to diagnose and say, oh, how could he do that? So, look, players are going to redline. What exactly is wrong with that? Has a fan ever been injured as a result? Has there ever been a mass exodus of sponsors after a fight broke out on the court? And I'm not asking to legislate so that we've got brawls on the court. I'm just, what exactly are we so damn afraid of? Because the women don't look afraid. Their coaches, their families, the people watching don't look afraid that something is going to jump off. They all look engaged, on fire, and all in, which is how it should be. All right. That does it for this episode of On the Ball on the United WeCast Network. Please rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. In the next episode, I'm thinking about breaking down the J.J. Redick LeBron James podcast. You may be surprised at what I have to say about the new product, the new entry in the podcast landscape. As you probably would guess, there are things that things that I'm not wild about, but there are things that I appreciate about it too. And anyway, feels like it's a potential subject that we could get into. particularly why these two guys would do this podcast. I'm always big on what's the motive here, looking at what the motive is. That always says a lot. And if we can diagnose that, then we can sort of follow the trail and see the rest of the story evolve with clear eyes. That is my plan for the next podcast, but we shall see if something else comes up in the meantime. And in the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.